From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, October 3rd. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gwyneth Cheesh. Hawa Toeksik Nusum Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, we take a look at next week's Alaska Entrepreneurship Week, a statewide conference that will also have a presence next week here in Juneau. We talk with Jason Briner about his upcoming lecture, Waking Up from the Last Ice Age, happening next week as part of the SHI Fall Lecture Series. And we preview next week's Southeast Alaska Parkinson's Disease Education Day. Those conversations, plus Tongass Voices and more, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. And the word this week is kech.
Kech.
That means dog. And here's a sentence. The dog is the man's best friend. Let's hear it again.
Kech.
Gunash Chish Tachune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is kochetan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin, and grew up spending time in Teslin and around Teslin Lake. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series. She is currently translating projects for the Children of the Taku Society.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3, 91.7, Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That was a little taking care of business. And that's exactly what's going to be happening next week across the state, online, and here in Juno, Alaska Entrepreneurship Week. It runs from Monday, October 7th through Friday, October 11th. It will have virtual events plus a mixer right here in Juneau on Tuesday, and it's a great way to connect and learn with folks around the city and state on all things business. You can find out more about the whole week and the schedule at akew.org. And today, we have three guests to help us dive into the event. Mark Wheeler from spruceroot.org.
Hey, hey.
Hi, Mark. Gwyneth Cheesh. Brian Holtz from the Juneau Economic Development Council, JEDC.org. Hi, Brian. And Lance McMullen from Sitkana, which is sitkana.com, I believe. And it is a really cool company that we talked with you maybe a year or so ago when you won a really cool award. And it's all about harnessing the power of the ocean to power coastal communities. And we'll get an update and see how entrepreneurship has been going for you. So Gwyneth Cheeshot, Yeyadi, thank you all so much for coming in. It's a pleasure to talk with you all. So Was Iti, how's it going? So first of all, let's get set with what is Alaska Entrepreneurship Week? Who wants to take that?
Well, maybe I'll start there.
Yeah,
it's
you
a,
go.
Yeah, this is Brian. It's a celebration, and an opportunity to highlight the important role that entrepreneurship plays in our society. You know, we're all in here in America as a capitalist society that without private business, we're just not going to get anywhere. And it's known that that's where job formation is, job creation. Most of that happens in small businesses and in startups. So we need to have an environment that really supports and encourages people to take risks, people to make investments, people like Lance right here. And that's what Alaska Startup Week is all about. It's a week to focus people's attention and draw some people in. Even if you don't have that business that's ready to go, but you're curious to start a business, this is an opportunity to learn more.
I love that. And Mark, who is this for?
It is targeted at entrepreneurs, but also, like Brian said, entrepreneur curious. So, you know, a lot of us have business ideas from time to time. And if you want to hang out with some other entrepreneurs and get inspired, meet some folks. I think that's really what is needed. You know, we're trying to create this ecosystem of support for entrepreneurs, but having those networks, having those people you can share ideas with, having those people you can like share a beer with when you're having a tough day, you know, creating that kind of network of support is really important. So this is just kind of a casual mixer. We're going to have some speakers that will share from their experience like Lance. But yeah, if you just want to check out what's happening in the entrepreneur community, come on out. We're going to have some snacks. We're going to have some speakers, open bar, kind of a casual time.
Can I ask for those like myself who may not completely understand the term, what is an entrepreneur?
Yeah. That's a French word. Yeah, it's tough to spell, too.
How many E's is in that word? That was what I was doing this week.
But it's, you know, it's a small business owner. That's basically what it is. Somebody has an idea and brings that to reality. And it's a unique breed of folks that'll do this, that'll jump off the cliff and take a risk.
Isn't it that's the thing you said, that will take a risk, right? That yeah. will push something. Because a lot of people have ideas.
Right.
A lot of people say, oh, I could have invented that. Oh, I could have done that. Or what if I ran this business? But it's really that extra thing that people have in themselves to push themselves forward. And we'll talk to Lance about that a little bit. But I'm just curious, like, is that something we might learn next week, is what it takes? Because I know there's some virtual seminars next week that people can take, and there's stuff that's happening up in Anchorage, and you're having your mixer. But are there things that we're going to learn, like, what do I actually need to become? Where do I get this energy and this drive from?
Yeah, I think that's internal. But I think the cool thing about this week is we're showcasing all the supports that are out there in Alaska, in Juneau. You know, several organizations sponsoring this event, the Spruce Root, JADC, Juneau Chamber, Downtown Business Association, Alaska Small Business Development Center. So this is a great representation of all those supports that are there. You still have to have the drive and the will like Lance has had and the fire in the belly, but you don't have to do it alone.
Gotcha.
And there's a lot of people out there that want you to succeed that will support you along the journey, but it does take that.
And you can have different motivations. You know, you have some people that are motivated. There's a mission that they want to achieve, see some change. But you also have people that just want to be their own boss. Mm. And that's part of – that's fine. And that is – there's an important role. And there are a lot of people that end up running businesses, becoming entrepreneurs because, you know, they'd rather not work for somebody. They enjoy the freedom. It's not – maybe as much freedom.
It's not free as you think, right? That's the reality that comes into play. Mark, you own Copa, you know, right?
Well, no, but there is a lot. Like, you know, like if you have to, like, take a doctor's appointment, take your kids to school in the morning, you do have that ability to create your own schedule, which is really appealing. And I didn't really realize that until I got into it.
Yeah, nice. So I know you mentioned some of the sponsors for this event. Before we get talking to Lance here, how are Spruce Root and JADC directly involved in this? Are you all the ones hosting the mixer? Let's talk a little bit about that mixer.
We are, and as well as DBA Chamber and Small Business Development Center. And so the mixer is going to be on
Tuesday, 5:30 to 7 at Amalga Distillery. We're going to have some snacks and, yeah, some speakers. But we're just trying to help get the word out and be there. And there'll be some information we'll give out about our different services. But
you don't have to register or anything.
No,
you
no,
just
no.
show up at Amalga at 5:30 on Tuesday, October 8th is when.
And the key up, Lance. Where
I think Brian's buying. Aren't you buying? No, it's an open bar. A cash bar. Cash bar.
Yeah, don't say open
cash
bar. Somebody
cash
said that yesterday, too. And I was like, no.
That's
open
not
bar
is
not what it is. Cash bar. Cash bring bar. Your money.
So we as organization are going to be there. We will have some snacks. So come on down, have a little bit of free food, but, you know, when they're gone, they're gone. But what we're going to do is we're going to have three entrepreneurs. We're going to give them a chance to tell some of their stories. We have Morgan Johnson from the Juneau Plant Studio, Desiree Aronson from Picture This, and...
Yeah, and Lance McMullen from Sitkana.
Awesome. mm-hmm. Yeah, and so let's talk about that, Lance. This is great because I know you came in, you won an innovation prize. I know you won something at the Innovation Summit, mm-hmm. but you also won, was it the Edge Prize?
The Edge Prize.
Yeah, the Edge Prize. And that was like, and you had just started with, you had a prototype. So, and tell us a little, so catch people up. What is Sitkana? What is it about? Let's talk about your product first, and then we'll talk a little bit about business and entrepreneurship.
Yeah, thanks. Sitkana is my company that I'm trying to generate clean electricity from the tidal currents here in Southeast Alaska. It's a renewable, reliable, predictable source of energy that we should all be using, especially the remote communities that don't have access to hydropower or conventional sources. So yeah, I've been building that. And around a year ago when I came on here, it was, I'd just gotten here. I won the Innovation Summit pitch contest, which was great. And that's a big reason I wanted to take part in this Entrepreneurship Week, is because I have used the resources around here. I've kind of gone through all the different programs. I'm in Spruce Roots Path to Prosperity business competition as a finalist right now, and that's a great resource as well. And yeah, Spruce Root and JADC being here, it's been it's just the community does want to support entrepreneurship. And so if I could just, you know, be there to explain, you know, how to get into these processes and how to really get going, I think it could be valuable to other people in the community.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I remember when we were I was so fascinated by it, because sort of ocean power generation. And remind folks how you got into that. What inspired you to sort of find this idea?
Yeah. I came up to Southeast Alaska as a fisherman in 2010, and I was working on a power troller out of Sitka. And I just really experienced the power in the water. And I just thought, you know, we're using wind, we're using solar, we should just be accessing this power somehow. But yeah, it's difficult to do. And
didn't you tell me that you were standing on the back, you saw like the water propelling out behind the boat, and you thought there's got to be a way to use this as energy?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, the lures were spinning. It just looked like it should be spinning just like a wind turbine.
Wow.
So yeah, it's been a long mission. I got an engineering degree. I went to work for a wind company, climbing turbines and then repairing them, and just got hands-on experience and learned how to do it. And then when I got up here last time, it was still pretty much an idea. But right after that, I got a large-scale 3D printer. It's in my garage on Douglas. And with that, I've built a full-scale prototype, tested in the water. It works. It needs a few more efficiency improvements before it's ready for sale, but we're getting very close.
That is so cool. And I know that you had sort of talked about that 3D printer and that you had that in your garage, which I think is cool. So you had this idea, right? And you implemented it. You got some training. You got some education. You started to build a prototype. Let's talk about the business aspect now. And I know you applied for some of these grants, but how do you, like, go from that idea into a business person?
Yeah, it's a transition. you have to really, and that's something that, again, a lot of the resources around the state have helped me also. G-Beta in Anchorage is another program offered, and that program really taught me to think about things from a customer perspective, focus on your customer segments, and that brought me to Southeast and the people who actually need this power, these remote communities. And I'm focusing on Cake as my initial pilot site, which is going to hopefully happen next year. But just thinking more about customers, thinking about their needs, thinking about, you know, who will actually pay for this thing, how will they maintain it, what are their, you know, how will they feel about me coming in with this product. So there's a lot of variables, and then,
I'm sure that the Path to Prosperity program is great training and helping you with all this kind of stuff as well. And I know Spruce Root does a great job with that. And we've had that. We talked about that on the show before. Does it put you into thinking about like a 5-year plan and things like that? And really what I want to ask is, where do you see ocean power generation in Alaska in 5 years? What's the vision?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark's what is that vision?
Yeah, step one is just getting it in the water, proving that we can power, you know, first a house or a town, first a house, then a town, then these communities. And, you know, within 5 years, I think these 500-person communities could be coming fully online with tidal power.
Wow.
Like starting with Cake and Angoon and Huna and a lot of these places nearby that are on diesel and it would like cheaper, reliable sources. So
Wow. I think you're going to be winning a lot more than just business startup awards, right? I think you're going to be winning some other awards as as you get this product in the water and get it tested. And obviously it's going to take a little bit of time. But, wow, Gunath Cheese for that hard work and, like, seeing it happen is going to be really amazing. Please make sure you come back and keep us up to date on this as we go. And so that's really great, Lance. Thank you so much. And, Brian, you mentioned you had a couple other people who are good. And so Lance is going to be speaking on Tuesday along with Desiree and Morgan, two other wonderful entrepreneurs here in Juneau. And so I'm just curious about, like, do we know, like, how many entrepreneurs there are in Juneau? How many small businesses do we have? Like, I know you have some numbers and stuff. What do you got?
We do. We know that entrepreneurship in general is, across the nation, it's picking up again. In Juneau, we have a surprising number of new businesses that start each year. We also have a lot of businesses that close down each year.
Or sell.
Yeah. Or
sell. I did not look at you that way. Still going on.
But it's like 300 last year. 317 new businesses formed.
In Juneau,
right?
Wow.
But they can be that's of all sizes and types. And lots of them are really small. And especially with this gig economy, I don't make light of it, but there are a lot of people that are trying to doing some really small activities, home-based businesses that are as real as any other business because it takes all the skills, but maybe doesn't generate a lot of resources for them.
Right.
So it is great. We find it tricky to track these businesses. We do track establishments, and I don't even want to give the statistics because just looking at them from last year, we're seeing hundreds of jobs disappeared because the numbers, what people are really good at and what we can track is when they start the business because they provide a business license. What we really have trouble is when that business ends. Mm. And so that sort of data is messy. But when we just look at the number of people every year in Juneau that decide to start a new business, we're 250 to 300 consistently every year and heading up. So that's good.
Yeah.
Nationwide, it was up 60% 2023, 60% more new businesses than pre-pandemic. So something happened in the pandemic that encouraged people to start business, and it's still going on.
Well, those people who left their corporate jobs and went into their own kind of thing, they said, well, geez, time might be short. I better do the thing that I've been wanting to do maybe. So what do you all think is sort of your prediction for like the next 5 years of the sort of entrepreneur community here in Juneau? What does it look like?
Well, I like that Juneau is supportive of our entrepreneurs. We're in the middle of election and we don't know exactly where things are going to fall. But one thing that's been really good for Juneau and its entrepreneurship growth has been our tourism businesses. That sector with a lot of visitors produces opportunities for folks to try businesses. You know, restaurants, for example. Our restaurants failed like other restaurants, but they have a good run at it because there's a lot of customers, and that's created I think a pretty dynamic environment. We see a lot of creative work in the tourism space in particular, and we're fortunate to be in a community where not only do our young people get a chance to work in small businesses, but we're in a community that's pretty dynamic. We get a lot of customers. I mean, lots of people come to Juneau, so I think we're in a good place for business creation. And one of the things that we want to do for economic development is you got to look at your core industries, of course, but you always have to be open to and supportive of that new business. Whoever knew that making beer would be a big winner in Juneau, Alaska? And sure enough, we produce great beer and other correlated products.
Well, I think too, Lance is a great example. There's a lot of money that's going to be coming into the region around clean energy. There are these green banks coming, and Spruce Root is a part of that. But, we're uniquely positioned in Southeast Alaska with our remarkable clean hydropower. And folks like Lance, I think, are going to be really part of this as we move forward because there is a lot of federal interest in supporting a green economy, and we're really well positioned here in Juneau.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, all of you, thank you, Gunath Cheese, for coming in, telling us about it. It's Alaska Entrepreneurship Week. You can find out more at akew.org. And the mixer, Mark, tell us again about that.
Yeah, it's 5:30 to 7, Amalga Distillery on Tuesday night. So come on down.
5:30 p.m.
And come on down if you're an experienced business person, come on down and be a mentor. Meet some new entrepreneur and help them out. Those are really important connections.
Absolutely. Mark, Brian, Lance, thank you all so much. Good cheese for being here. Really appreciate it.
Good cheese.
Up next, Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Nestled between tall trees, George Gress makes guitars in his wood shop. He's been making them over the past decade. But in the last few years, he's brought on two ambitious students.
This is right where you want it.
Uh-huh.
This is. But the profile's not yet. So you don't want to go any, you don't want to grind any more of this off. So let me make a little pencil mark. George Gress, and I've been here a lifetime, about 35 years, and started making guitars 10 years ago, and have gradually been able to mentor and help some other guitar makers get started. Feel right here? That's flat.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that flat. So what you're going to be working on is just like this. You're just going to go back and forth a lot.
I'm Brian Bolaños. I grew up here in Juneau. Originally from the Philippines. I'm a self-taught musician and artist, and I do like a million things, and this is one of them. This is my first guitar build, and I think about like 2 years ago, 2 years into learning the guitar, I was looking at luthier colleges. Luthier is like what this profession is, making six-string instruments or stringed instruments, and I was like looking into it, and it was like 20 grand. For tuition.
Right.
And then you gotta stay there for like 5 months.
Yeah. But then I just messaged George and he just got me in right away and just like, now I'm doing it. So I didn't need to go pay a crazy tuition, and then I just get to hang out with some cool people and make instruments.
He hasn't seen my bill yet.
Oh gosh.
It got started. That Brian like thought he had to earn his place here first. And he's like, I can clean up and I can do this, and I can do that. And George and I were like, what are you talking about? Just pick some wood. Pick some wood and get going.
Yeah, I'm Joseph Galgano. I moved to Juneau in 2018, and I make guitars and bass guitars under the name Intrepid Guitars. When I was in college, I always wanted like a custom guitar, but it just felt really unattainable and like, custom guitars are like, if you go to Fender Custom, it's like $3,000 to $4,000. And I was just like, why don't I just try to make my own guitar? And then that's how it started. And I was doing it, but being under George's mentorship really, really expedited the process. And now I have a shop in my garage. And I'm almost self-sufficient, almost.
Being a musician, you know, ourselves, like we know how we want it to sound and how we want it to feel.
That's probably been my favorite part, is seeing the guitar put together and hearing how it sounds, because each one sounds different. You know, you put the work into it, so kind of have a connection to it. Brian, we cut his, it was just a block of wood, and we cut it into his guitar shape. And I saw Brian, like, getting excited. He's like, oh, my God, it's an actual guitar. And I was like, so this is how George feels. I was like, I could see why he likes it so much.
Yeah.
That was George Gress, Joseph Galano, and Brian Bolaños for this week's Tongass Voices. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. On Tuesday, October 8th at noon at the Walter Sobolev Building, the SHI Lecture Series continues and welcomes to Juno Dr. Jason Briner, an expert on glaciers, climate change, and more. His talk, Waking Up from the Last Ice Age, will be featured, and I'm joined now by Jason from Buffalo, where he serves as professor of geology at the University of Buffalo. Gwyneth Chisha Igudi, thank you so much for joining us, Jason. Wasaiti, how's it going?
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
How's your weather in the fall in Buffalo over there right now?
You know what? We're finally starting to turn the corner, and it's feeling a little bit chilly in the mornings. It's really welcome. It's very, very nice.
Nice. Well, we are rain. So you'll probably see some of that when you come into Juneau next week. And of course, for more on the series, you can go to SealaskaHeritage.org. They also have a YouTube page where they'll be archiving the talks if you can't make it at noon next Tuesday, October 8th. And of course, more is on Jason. You can find at buffalo.edu. I also noticed, Jason, that you have a pretty extensive scholar.google.com page. Is that kept up to date and everything? Is that the best place to find some of your research?
Yeah, it turns out those Google Scholar pages are neat because they keep that up to date for you. Basically, when you publish scholarly articles on your research, it goes into a database and they compile it under your name. So that's kind of a place to go to look at the portfolio of the kinds of research that my program does.
Awesome. That's great. Well, let's talk a little bit about sort of your superhero origin story first. How did you get interested in geology and geoscience research to begin with? Did it start as a kid?
Well, I think I was always drawn to playing in the woods growing up. I grew up in the suburb of Seattle area. And so I definitely spent a lot of time in the woods as a kid. I never really knew what geology was. And I must say that it's kind of funny and it's a twist of my career, but the first time I really got the bite of geology and really sucked in was when I had an opportunity to go to Southeast Alaska as a field assistant for a graduate student researcher. And that trip really sealed the deal for me in lighting a passion for geology and for the study of glaciers and glacier history on Earth.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. That's kind of your origin story. You're returning almost. It's kind of where you started. It was right here in Southeast. That's kind of cool.
It's now, very much a return for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you've done all kinds of study. You've been doing this for many, many years. And is your primary area, are you looking at Alaska still? I know you do a lot of work looking in Greenland. And where is that pretty much you're sort of up around the Arctic areas, all the different things that touch the Arctic?
Yeah, that's right. I'd say if I have an expert area to study, a field area, if you will, it's the Arctic. And I emphasize certain parts of the Arctic, like various corners of Arctic North America, from the Greenland on that corner of high latitude North America, Arctic North America, all the way over to Alaska on the other side of Arctic North America. So I've worked all over the state in my career. And in the last 10 years, I've been really lucky to have research in Southeast Alaska.
That's awesome. So I'm just curious because I know this has been, you've been doing this for a couple decades, I believe. And what have you noticed in terms of changes over the years, in terms of whether it's in the research or in the areas that you're studying?
Yeah, there's interesting changes taking place in the all over the Arctic, of course, and in my short time span of going to these places, really just the last 20 or 30 years, those changes are very noticeable. For example, glacier retreat, the places where I've returned, it's like, whoa, that glacier is now gone. Or I might be planning to go to an area relying on a satellite image or an air photograph that was taken previously as I'm trying to get familiar with the area, and then I show up and it's not exactly what it looked like in that image. So the changes are observable. Similarly, I think in the last 20 or 30 years, there's been a much, there's been a societal awakening of these changes that are taking place also, and that's been interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny in terms of, like, we've definitely have become more aware as an overall sort of society of this thing. And one of the questions I had for you is, you know, we hear the gloom and doom from folks, from scientists, and saying that, you know, if we don't do something about climate change, or really it's too late already, You know, 2034 was a number I heard a couple years ago as sort of like, you know, the end times, that kind of thing. Where are you at, and how can we better understand it as lay people in terms of what's actually going on?
Yeah, you do hear a lot of these things about these maybe tipping points, for example, like let's not let CO2 get this high. If things go out of control like this for another decade, then we're going to cross a tipping point. In fact, research that I've been involved with, although the problem is very serious and the trajectory is not one we necessarily want to be on, I've been involved in research projects that show, you know, if humanity makes some good decisions still this day and in the coming decade, there's time for a lot of glaciers to slow down in their thinning and retreat rates and to stabilize.
I see. Yeah, it's fascinating because you've probably heard about the flooding, the glacial flooding that we've had here the last couple years, and they're looking at ways to, you know, mitigate that over the coming years. And I'm curious, like, do the people who make those decisions use the research that you and your colleagues and all the people out there doing this work, are they actually listening? You know, it's like those movies where the people don't listen to the scientists and then the bad things happen. Like, are they listening to you?
Yeah, it depends on who you ask. You know, I think that the more and more it is down at the community level, I think the listening comes easier and more natural. I want to say, really heartfelt sympathies to Juno and the flooding that's happened these last two summers. It's just a horrible thing. If you read those stories, it's very clear that the coverage of these disasters that are happening to your community, the coverage has a lot of science in it. These movies of the lake level of this like suicide basin lake that fills up and then drains. And these are the kinds of things that I show like in my advanced lecture classes to students, teaching them about how glaciers work and what are the hazards associated with glaciers. And so seeing that embedded right in these articles describing the natural events that are unfolding now tells me that at the community level, especially when there's big societal impacts like this, the science is heard.
That's good. That's good to hear, actually. So next week, Tuesday, again, as I mentioned, you're going to be at the Walter Sobolev Building. What is your talk, Waking Up from the Last Ice Age, going to be covering?
Yeah, so it's going to be about the history of Southeast Alaska. It's going to start with how all the terrain, probably all of Southeast Alaska, was covered by a vast ice sheet that grew starting in the mountains and flowed out through all the beautiful fjords and sounds in Southeast and went on the opposite, on the Pacific Ocean side of all the islands and was parked out there somewhere, smothering all of Southeast Alaska. And then as that ice age ended and transitioned into modern day warmer time period, all these fascinating changes take place. The glaciers like excavated and collapsed back towards the mountains where they reside today. So the fjords eventually all became ice free. A lot of the land popped out of the ocean as the load of the ice was removed. Volcanoes were starting to like pop off because the crust was having some changes with the glacier load being gone. There's fascinating, totally fascinating biological history too. All the different islands sometimes have a really unique post-glacial, we call it, post-ice age pattern of how the vegetation came back in and colonized and how the animals are unique maybe to some islands and not others. And so part of my research as a glacial geologist and a paleoclimatologist, part of my research is collaborating with biologists who are studying these parallel problems of how the whole ecosystem in Southeast Alaska evolved since the Ice Age ended.
Wow. That sounds like it's going to be fascinating talk. I know people will be looking forward to that. And of course, as I mentioned, if you can't make it live on noon on Tuesday, October 8th, it will be archived. Jason's speech will be archived on the YouTube page for Sea Alaska Heritage, which is really cool. And so, Jason, what is your hope for the future in terms of your areas of research and glacial study and climate change?
Yeah. You know, in addition to working in Southeast Alaska, I do a lot of work in Greenland, where there's a giant ice sheet that, you know, even a small fraction of it melts, that's going to lead to a important sea level rise component on Earth. In Southeast Alaska, of course, with a lot of the melting ice today, you have some land coming out of the ocean from those local crustal effects. But I guess my hope is that as we learn more about how sensitive glaciers are to climate change, there's a lot, actually some nuance there. Some glaciers just melt like you put an ice cube in the oven. Some glaciers break off, physically break apart in that calving process. And so because there's these different ways that glaciers respond to atmospheric temperature change, to changes in ocean circulation, there's still actually a wide range of predicting sea level in the future. So my goal is that my people are tightening our understanding on some of these nuances of how glaciers are responding to global change, and that policymakers can stay in tune with our findings.
And last question for you is, what can I do? What can a person who isn't a researcher or a policymaker, what is it that we could be doing today to be helping out?
Yeah, I think be interested if you can, and read an article now and again to kind of learn a little bit more. Maybe have a dinner conversation on some of these global change topics and what the glaciers and the sea ice and the ocean currents are doing, and just maybe challenge yourself to think about those things. I know that people in Alaska are very appreciative of their natural surroundings and their environment, much more so, I would say, on average than a lot of people on Earth. So that's really a good start. I think appreciation of the natural world goes a long way.
Yeah, acting local, right? Like getting involved in your local community, like you mentioned earlier. Well, Jason Briner, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about, giving us a preview of your talk next week. It's on Tuesday, October 8th at noon at the Walter Soboleff Building. It's part of the SHI Fall Lecture Series. For more on Jason, you can visit buffalo.edu or go to his scholar.google.com page. And, of course, for the Fall Lecture Series, hit up SeaAlaskaHeritage.org or check out their YouTube page for all the talks that have been happening this fall. There's really been some fascinating ones. So, going to the cheese, Jason. I really appreciate you taking the time. Enjoy your evening out there in Buffalo.
Thank you as well.
All right, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We'll be back to learn about Southeast Alaska Parkinson's Disease Education Day. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who travel to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a yitin. Jin katka ke jin talk anakaya ha anikak. Goodness, cheese.
Step in to the savory moment. What are two ingredients you're likely to see in Southeast Alaska, land of constant precipitation? Salmon and greens. Both benefit from a robust water cycle that feeds the ocean and local gardens to put big flavor on the dinner table. Why so much rain in Southeast? Topography is destiny. moisture from the Gulf of Alaska is trapped along the coastline by a tall flank of mountains, the Coast Range. Mountaintop glaciers that feed a network of rivers and streams means even more life-giving precipitation. Salmon love rain. It transports rainforest nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus to the sea and builds spawning grounds. Kale and chard love the rain too, their leaves growing plump with water and flush with minerals like potassium and magnesium transported from soil to cells. Salmon and greens love each other too, and preparations that exemplify their happy marriage are as endless as the rains themselves. Here's an example. Make a wild blueberry chamoy by blending fresh wild blueberries and jam with a little hot sauce. Season salmon portions with salt and pepper, then sear in a hot skillet. Transfer to a baking sheet and brush with chamoy. Saute a big pile of greens in the same skillet, adding a dash of salt and a splash of cider vinegar. Finish with a pinch of smoked paprika and transfer to a platter. Broil the glazed salmon to a bubbling finish about 3 minutes and place atop the greens. Serve with a pot of creamy polenta, and you've got dinner. Find the full recipe for Southeast salmon with blueberry chamoy and smoky rainforest greens at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Shortroads. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. Next Friday, October 11th at Riverview Senior Living is Southeast Alaska Parkinson's Disease Education Day. Its goal, to provide education and support for individuals and those supporting individuals who are affected by Parkinson's disease. And to find out more and register, you can visit bit.ly/PDJuno. That's bit.ly/PDJuno. And I'm joined now by Jen Gillick, Program Director for American Parkinson's Disease Association, and two Junoites, Richard Steele and Luann McVeigh. Gunath Tishat Yeyadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio today and joining us via Zoom. Thank you, Jen. And Jen, did I get your last name correct? I just want to make sure. Did I say Gillick?
You did. Gillick is my last name, yes.
Gillick. Okay, great. Well, let's start with you, Jen. Can you give us a sense of, let's just start with, what is Parkinson's disease?
Well, that is what we are going to be talking about a lot on Friday. Parkinson's disease is a neurological disorder, and it impacts both movement and non-movement. It is produced by a lack of dopamine in the brain. And what dopamine is responsible for is smooth and controlled movements. So it impacts a lot of different things, from things that you can see. We talk a lot about the analogy of an iceberg when we talk about Parkinson's disease. So we talk about kind of the motor symptoms of Parkinson's being above the water, like the tremor and the rigidity and the stiffness and slowness that someone can see. And then there's a lot of other things that can happen with Parkinson's disease, like sleep issues, challenges with the autonomic nervous system, temperature control, all sorts of kind of non-motor symptoms that can impact somebody's quality of life when living with Parkinson's.
Wow. And there's like different... Are there different stages or different levels of Parkinson's?
Yeah, there absolutely are different stages and levels of Parkinson's. And Parkinson's is also described as a snowflake disease because it impacts every individual a little bit differently. So if you see one person with Parkinson's, you've seen one person. And there are things that they have in common, but everybody, it impacts a little bit differently. And so learning about the condition and the disease can be so important because it is so different individual to individual.
Great. Okay. Thank you for getting us settled with that particular thing. Now, Richard and Luann, welcome into the studio. Thank you so much for being here. And I know, Richard, you're living with Parkinson's disease. Yes. How did you first begin to notice symptoms?
I'm still discovering the fact that I had symptoms a long time ago, but I had tremor. First of all, I lost my sense of smell.
Okay.
And people made fun of me because I couldn't smell things. And I was known for not having a very good smeller. And lo and behold, it was one of the symptoms, the first symptoms you notice.
When did you start to lose your sense of smell? Do you remember what age?
I'd say 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So was it kind of a slow onset then over the years? You didn't go in right away and say, hey.
Also, I had gait problems. People made fun of my gait.
Okay.
I had kind of a loping gait.
Mm.
And, you know, I just felt, today I noticed I had a loping gait. And I thought, you know, I've had that a long time.
Interesting.
So I had more aspects of it longer than I even thought.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And when did you get
diagnosed
with
2016.
That? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's been, what is that, 8 years?
Yeah, I was actually getting a massage treatment in Juneau, partially because I had tensions I couldn't explain, and I was going to Texas to see a somatic massage therapist. And we stopped by Baylor University just to rule out Parkinson's. And we weren't there 20 minutes, so the guy said, you have Parkinson's disease.
Wow, they were just able to recognize it right away.
Yeah. Right away.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it was harsh.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I guess the reality of hearing that and knowing what that means
Also, I'm attuned to people that have it, so I notice people walking around Juneau and stuff that I believe have it that don't recognize it.
May not be diagnosed yet.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Interesting. And so what are you and Luann, what is your daily life like now? How do you treat the Parkinson's disease?
Well, you take pills that help. And then I also exercise vigorously. I exercise with Rocksteady Boxing at Pavitt Fitness every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Saturday is yoga day, so it's kind of a relaxation day.
I see.
Tuesday and Thursday, we have an hour and a half class. We do fitness exercises for Parkinson's disease.
Well, you just did a fantastic segue because I know that Pavitt Fitness, and I guess that's right, getting the body moving, right? And they're going to be part of this event next week in terms of something that will be happening, right? Luann, can you tell us a little bit? Do you know what Pavitt's is going to be doing next week?
Well, I probably would leave that to Jen to talk about, but I just was in touch with one of our coaches, Janet Valentour. And she had said that Jen had mentioned doing a movement break. So, Jen, do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah.
So, movement, as Richard was talking about, is a really, really critical piece of Parkinson's disease treatment. In fact, it is one of the only known things right now that can slow the progression of Parkinson's. So that's, the research is all very conclusive. So the medications are about treating the symptoms of Parkinson's. But right now we don't have a medicine that stops Parkinson's disease from progressing. So that's what fitness and movement are all about. And they're, so Pavitt Fitness runs this Rocksteady Boxing program. So on Friday, they're gonna do the movement breaks. So they're gonna do some demos, maybe get people up and moving, and showing them some of the moves that really help with Parkinson's disease. I like to talk a lot about how Parkinson's disease wants to make you smaller in your physical body. And so doing lots of movement that makes you bigger and using matching like cognition with your movement. So boxing is great for this, doing cross body sort of thing, really moving with big exaggerated movements, because then that translates to functionality in your everyday life.
I see. Okay.
So they're going to be doing some demos of that.
I see. And so give us an overview, too, of what else will be happening on this. And is there a reason that it's on this particular day, or is it just that's the day that they choose to do it here in Juneau?
That was the day we chose to do it in Juneau. We at APDA, American Parkinson's, I have been wanting to come to Juneau to do an educational program in person. And as you know, the logistics of that with weather and cruise ship season and things like that. And so we looked at the fall and decided that this was a good day to do it for my schedule and for Riverview's schedule and for the Pavitt Fitness people. So there's no magic like, hey, let's do it October 11th, other than that's the day we're coming. So,
I see. I just wonder if there was like a national day or something like that. I know that there's some legislation that was enacted and there's going to be, you know, some hopefully with that. But give us a rundown of what's going to be happening next Friday, October 11th.
Sure. So we're going to kick off the program at 9:30, and it's going to start with PD Essentials, which is really PD 101. It is an introduction to Parkinson's disease. We're going to talk about what the heck is Parkinson's disease? Why does somebody get Parkinson's disease? What are the causes? What are the treatment options with Parkinson's? And how does somebody live well with Parkinson's disease? And we're also going to touch on how do you also support someone who's living with Parkinson's disease? So we want people, not just ones who have a diagnosis with Parkinson's, but maybe you have an uncle that has Parkinson's disease who lives in Nebraska, or you have, you know, a mother or father or a cousin or anything like that, that having knowledge about Parkinson's can really help in your support of that person. So we want to cover those kind of topics. So we start with this PD Essentials, just ground everybody on that. Then we're going to have a movement break with Pavitt Fitness. Then we're going to have some refreshments and socialization and stuff that Riverview is going to be providing. And then the American Parkinson's Chief Mission Officer, Dr. Rebecca Gilbert, is going to join us on Zoom. So I'm going to be there in person, but Dr. Gilbert could not make it from New York this time, although she's dying to come to Alaska.
Who isn't?
But she's going to join us. Who isn't, right?
In October.
Right. I looked at that weather report. I'm going to bring my rain gear, but I'm wet ready. So she is going to join us, and it's going to be an Ask the Expert kind of program. We're trying to keep it kind of casual and loose. She's going to present on a variety of things with Parkinson's, but then she's just going to take questions from the audience. So what are folks curious about with Parkinson's? She is really amazing. Every time I see her speak, like what comes out of her mouth and her brain and the way it operates, whether she's talking about research or talking about clinical treatment of Parkinson's or new medications or exercise or why is my sleep affected? She's just really a wealth of knowledge. So she's just going to engage with folks with that. And then we're going to just sit around with the folks that are there, and myself and the social worker from our office, Katie, will be there, and we're going to talk about how do you build a robust community of people with Parkinson's. So in Southeast Alaska, in Juneau, the support group for people with Parkinson's, it folded during COVID. Pavitt Fitness is doing an awesome job with exercise programs, but there's not a whole lot of other things going on to really connect the community of people with Parkinson's. And so we want to learn from folks who are in the audience. We want to listen, and we want to talk about how can we, as American Parkinson Disease Association, how can we support this community? What kind of things does this community need? Because connections, knowing someone else who is living with your same condition, can make just a huge difference in your life and understanding what living with Parkinson's is about.
Yeah, the connection with others so that you recognize that you're not alone. Yeah. For the support folks like Luann, who's the wife of Richard here, to know that they're not alone and sort of having somebody to talk to about what they're dealing with. Because I think sometimes people forget that the caregiver also has emotions and things that they're going through when they're dealing with what's happening to their loved one. And so I think that's really great. So that sort of helps answer the question about who this is for. So it's really for anybody, whether you're, you know, if you have Parkinson's disease or if you're a loved one, like you said, you might have a family member, whether it's as close as a spouse or maybe it's an uncle or something like that. And I also think it's really interesting, Richard, I really want to thank you for sharing sort of the early years of that without even knowing that it was really Parkinson's, but just things to be on the lookout for, which might be some questions people could ask. Like if if you see somebody who is, you know, has an interesting gait, you know, or something that may be a little bit different than you notice, and you can say, hey, maybe you want to check something out or check with your doctor and all that kind of stuff. And so I think that's really fascinating. And I'm just wondering, like, for you, Richard, what is it that you would love for people to understand about Parkinson's disease?
Well, it's harsh. I will say that. And it kind of surprised me over time because I was tough. And I can deal with a lot of things, but this is very tough.
Yeah.
It is. But I am tough.
You are tough. Yeah, absolutely. And getting out there and meeting other people and having connection, I think that's going to be very valuable, right? And I think that would be sort of the hope for the future, right, is to be able to have a community come together and support those who are living with Parkinson's.
Yeah, it's valuable. It's valuable. Yeah. We help each other.
Yeah, absolutely. That's important. Yeah. I really appreciate that. Well, I thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story, and thank you, Luann, and thank you, Jen. I'm glad you're going to be coming here, even though you're going to probably be in the rain. It's all good, though. We love our rain here in Juneau. Otherwise, why would we live here?
I'm from Seattle.
You're from Seattle, so you get it. Well, I really appreciate it. And it's the Southeast Alaska Parkinson's Disease Education Day. It's next Friday, October 11th. It starts at 9:30 in the morning, and it's out at Riverview Senior Living. And for registration information or just more information in general, go to bit.ly/PDJuno. Thank you all so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Boston.
Thank you, Boston, for having us.
And that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, music from Muskeg Collective and preview of next week's events from Juno Audubon and Mudrooms. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program. You can find the information online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. I also had help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath Cheesh!